Washington gridlock could be especially bad news for research and development.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We're less than 2 days away from a possible government shutdown. That's if Congress can't get past partisan differences and pass a $1 trillion spending bill to keep agencies running. You've heard about the expiring payroll tax cut that's caught up in all of this, but there's another tax cut on the line, one for innovators, the kind of people who might be working on the next Google or Facebook. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
The research and development tax credit is renewed annually, but it can take a decade to get a great idea to market. Is this any way to run an innovation economy? William Solomon at Harvard Business School puts it this way. Suppose you're developing a new gas that costs just a buck a gallon. You face lots of challenges: technology, customers, idea theft, and, thanks to DC, financial unpredictability, too.
Uncertainty is what I always call a corrosive hidden tax. It's one thing I'm going to take on uncertainty or risk that I can manage, but I'm going to be far less likely to take on additional risks that I can't manage. And as we now know in Washington, I can't predict anything.
Solomon says a better, cheaper gas is good not just for the inventor, but for society. So he argues the feds should encourage innovation. Independent studies suggest tax breaks do pay off. They stimulate research, and they cut the cost of developing the next big thing by 6 or 7%. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Ministers from the World Trade Organization are meeting in Geneva today, and they're about to send an invitation to Russia to join the group. It'll be the biggest addition to the WTO since China joined 10 years ago. Peter Van Dyke reports from Moscow.
Russia is the last big world economy outside the WTO. It's taken 18 years to agree the terms. That shows lingering doubts both inside and outside the country. Sergei Yushin heads Russia's National Meat Association.
Russia would need about 8 to 10 more years to pursue independent industrial and agricultural policy to get ready to be more competitive when we really enter this WTO world.
Yushin says Russia's agricultural sector is just taking off, and a flood of cheap imports from the US and Europe would set it back.
We understand that we need this competition to modernize ourselves, to become more and more efficient. But this is really the worst possible time for opening the gates so widely.
Open they will, though, and it's not just foreign food producers who are looking to profit. Art Franchek is the president of the American Institute of Business and Economics in Moscow.
High-tech goods will have a zero tariff. So the high-tech companies are going to have a big opportunity in this country.
Russia hopes abolishing tariffs on high-tech goods will help it to modernize. After all, Russians want cheaper smartphones and tablets as much as anyone else. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down across Asia, but up across Europe this morning after a surprisingly strong bond auction in Spain. Spain paid about 2 percentage points less in interest to borrow than Italy did just yesterday. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 131 points to close at 11,823.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Republican candidates will meet tonight for a debate in Iowa, and according to the polls, the front runner right now is former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. So let's talk Newtonomics with historian Steve Gillen. He's the author of The Pact, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, and the Rivalry That Defined a Generation. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what would be the biggest economic change, do you think, under President Gingrich, if it comes to that, given what we know about him?
I think a lot of it depends on whether or not he has to deal with a Democratic Congress. Gingrich has shown when he was speaker, especially in the final phase of his speakership, that he is willing to reach across the aisle and form bipartisan relationships. There are two Newt Gingriches. Gingrich has always made a distinction between politics and governance. For him, politics are the inflammatory things you have to say in order to gain power. Once he's in power, he is more compromising and more willing to propose bipartisan solutions. When I did my research on the relation between he and Clinton, I was amazed that the policy people in the Clinton White House all told me that behind closed doors, where there are no cameras there and a lot of other people to play to, that Gingrich was always trying to make a deal. They found Gingrich easy to deal with.
Well, what do we know about where he stands on the big economic issues of the day?
Gingrich doesn't really have a well-thought-out economic philosophy. All the issues are all framed based on his sense of what works politically. So he doesn't sit around with economists and say, okay, these are the issues that are going to be the best for America. He sits around and says, what issues can I pick and choose from that are going to undermine Democrats and improve my position?
Well, there's one economic idea that's gotten a lot of attention that he has said that we should change the child labor laws in this country.
Yeah. That's typical Gingrich. You know, Gingrich comes out with wacky ideas. It won't be the last crazy idea from Newt Gingrich that we hear on the campaign trail. It's not something I think we'd have to worry about if he became president.
Steve Gillen, author of The Pact, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, and the Rivalry That Defined a Generation, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And we'll be talking about the economic policies of the other candidates in the coming weeks. Finally, to some new local TV ads on the air in Davenport, Iowa, that actor Will Ferrell wanted to do for free. They're for Old Milwaukee Beer.
When I'm not too busy being a big-time Hollywood phony, I like to come out here to Davenport, sit on my favorite log, and crack open a ice-cold Old Milwaukee. Something I do. Well, truth be told, I've never been to Davenport. This is my first time, but it's something I want to do, you know?
It remains unclear why Ferrell chose Davenport or why he chose Old Milwaukee, which online reviewers give a D+. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Bloomingdale's is all about high-end, high style, and high fashion, right?
Every time we're in New York, we come to Bloomingdale's for the frozen yogurt.
Wait, what?
Every time we're in New York, we come to Bloomingdale's for the frozen yogurt.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, department store restaurants. They're back. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.